And welcome back to Brain Dump. So this week we have my uncle Carl on the show, and this is much more of a personal story, more of the human side. And we discuss the death of my aunt and his wife, Aunt Pam. And we talk about the grief and dealing with that and the process up to her death, but also his wedding in January with his new fiance. So this is all something to look forward to in this episode, and I hope you enjoy. Hello and welcome. You're listening to
Brain Dump.
This is a podcast where we talk about life from the meaningful
to the extreme.
Thanks, Carl, for coming on the podcast. So just tell us a little bit about yourself and why you've come on the show today.
Well, you're my nephew for a start.
Mm-hmm.
You know that, don't you? And this part of the family comes from Wigan, mm-hmm. right? So me and your dad, we were brought up in Wigan in a place called Kendall Street, which, to be honest, to some of your mates growing up in Wigan, God, they just wouldn't believe it in the early, 50s.
Mm.
There was like, we used to be in gangs. We were really stupid. It was like, for example, we used to have a bloke with only one arm.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And his main job, believe it, this is how, it was before alarm clocks. His main job was knocking people up. So he'd come along the street with a big pole. He only had one arm. And that's what he did. And he'd give him like, 20p or whatever they used to give him. But really, he only had to knock about four up because you could hear him half an hour before, you know, or he'd knock you up. So he used to knock my dad up with a big stick on the pole, you know.
Yeah.
And then unfortunately, alarm clocks come in and he were made redundant. You know what I mean? That was Faggy. His name was one-arm Faggy. Anyway, that was that. So you can imagine what kind of place it was.
Mm.
We used to play just rugby in the street.
Mm.
No cars at all. And if a car actually come down, he was like, what are you doing? We're playing rugby. Do you know what I mean? It's like, just, you know, what are you doing?
Mm.
So that's the kind of thing my mum and dad never saw was your dad, Chris. I'm 4 years older than Chris. And we didn't, as we were growing up, we were kind of different kind of people. I mean, we're even more different now. Your dad's gone one way and I've gone the other way. Your dad's like outspoken now and like I've gone more quieter. And but in them days, I was the one who was like, you know, used to look out for our Chris. He used to be like, he weren't bullied or nothing, but he used to be. I remember somebody called Paul Featherstone who was giving him trouble at school and I had to go around and give him a crack, this Paul Featherstone. You know what I mean? So, I mean, come on, look at your dad now. You know what I mean?
Mm.
So that's the kind of bloke where I've come from. Mm. You know what I mean? And that's what it was all about, really.
Yeah. Yeah. So why did you want to come on the podcast?
Well, in a way, I've come on a big journey, not just with my life. That was just a background about who I am and what I'm about.
Mm.
But it's like I've been married for 40 years and my wife passed away 2 years ago, nearly. And that was such a major thing, obviously. It was traumatic. Yeah, yeah. And so I'd like to talk about basically that, how that come about. And then to actually not getting through the grief, but living with it and understanding it and moving on to meeting somebody else. And as you know, getting married next year, you know what I mean? So that's what, so hopefully it should be quite an interesting story. And if not, they can always switch off, can't they? So whatever.
So just for some context, Pam, so people listening, was my aunt and your wife.
Yeah.
So how old are you when you met Pam?
Right. I was 21, 20, 20. But first of all, let me just tell you how we actually got there.
Okay.
Because it's all, I wanted to say this, which is part of the growing up stage in a way.
Mm.
You're defined by what you are when you're younger. And when I was younger, we had what was known as an 11 plus. Have you ever heard of that?
Yeah, yeah.
Right. So an 11 plus defines where you're going and what you're about. Anyway, I was quite bright at school, and we did this 11 plus, and basically I finished 20 minutes before everybody else, sat there thinking, come on, get on with it, let's finish. Lo and behold, I failed. I turned two pages over and I just sat there for 20 minutes. So I missed out 30 questions, basically. So I failed. So but that defined what I was going to be and where I was going. Because I was a rugby player, like your dad. Mm. I thought it was pretty good and all that. And it meant that I went to a different school.
Mm.
I went to, because I failed, I went to a place called Gidlow. And basically, Gidlow, if you got kicked out of Gidlow, you went to Barstow. You didn't go to another school. It was that kind, but it was brilliant. Okay. But they only played football. So this is how I'm getting on to Pam. So basically, as you know, I become a professional footballer at 15. And then I played for Blackburn, and then I played for Wigan Athletic. And Pam, well, she killed me, she knew, but I used to call her a wag. You know what I mean? But like, when I first met Pam, she was working in a, I'd actually been playing tennis, and she was serving in a bar.
Oh, yeah.
And me and my mate went in for a game of snooker afterwards, and she was serving. I didn't know her from Adam. And I said to my mate, she keeps smiling at me, that girl. And he said, no, she's laughing at you, Carl. I said, no, she's smiling at me. So that was the very first. And then after that, I just kept bumping into her.
Mm.
And then she started to come. I was then playing for Wigan Athletic. I saw her at Wigan Athletic, and that was that. And she was going out with somebody else at the time.
Mm.
And then one night, me and a lad called Ada, who we used to go, that was like, you know, one of your mates. We saw her in Tiffany's, a nightclub in Wigan, and she was dancing with the two jockeys.
Hey, right.
Not her with two. Her and her mate was dancing with two jockeys from ADOC.
Okay.
And me and Ada was like, you know, like you do on the sideline, waiting for a toilet to do something. So as soon as we went toilet, we went in. We was 18, 19, something like that.
Mm.
And that was the start of meeting Pam. And like, you know, and basically we ended up living together for a bit, and then we got married, and we've been married for 40 years. Mm. You know.
When did you get married?
I got married when I was 21.
A couple of years after.
Yeah, I've known her about 9 or 12 months. Pam had her with Phil.
Mm.
By Jeff, her other husband, he wasn't a nice person, really, Jeff. Mm. Well, he was in jail, actually. that's how nice he was for stabbing somebody. He weren't nice, was it? You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
That was living in his house, and his son fell.
Mm.
I wanted to adopt him, and when he come out of prison, he come round seeing us, and he wanted to. Well, I don't know what he wanted, but.
Like, did you find it hard, sort of, basically taking up almost like a bit of a father role with?
No. I just, my mum found it hard. She didn't speak to Pam, not when we was married. She didn't speak to Pam for about 4 months. It was not the dumb thing, was it, to go out with a lady or a woman who had a child, not around here. It was like, you kind of like, you got married and you died with the person who, you know what I mean? And you just didn't do that. So like, it was a bit unusual, but I found it quite easy. I mean, Philip's father basically come in that day and he basically said, oh, well, give me the adoption forms. I'll sign them here. And I said, no. I said, think about it. Think about it before you sign. Once you sign them, you have nothing more to do with Philip. You can't, and that he took the farms on with him. I've never seen him since. Went to Jersey, and nobody. Well, Phil saw him a couple of times, I think, but nothing. You know, he's passed away too now. But no, I didn't find it hard, Connor. It was just a natural process. We had Philip. Philip was always even come on our living with us. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, it was like natural, and then we had Haley, a few years later. So it kind of like, you know, that was the family as such.
Yeah.
You know.
And didn't you run a business together? Or like a pub and stuff?
Oh, God. How many businesses have we had? Yeah. Yeah, I mean, when we first started, I was obviously, I was part-time with Wigan Athletic, but I was also working for my dad at the time, when I first met Pam. God, that was hard work. My dad was hard work, I tell you. He really was. Do you remember my dad?
Yeah.
Yeah, Well, it was okay, but when he was working for him, it was hard work. And we didn't really get on, you know. So I went self-employed, being a painter and decorator. Pam had four jobs. And we just struggled and we got by, as you do. And then one day, she was working in a pub at Creek, and she come home, she said, you know what, I'm bloody sick. She said, one guy just give me 20 quid for his round of drinks. She said, I've not made that all week. She said, we need to do something. We need to be self-employed and make our own money, Carl, because this is rubbish. So from that, she rented a catering trailer. Okay. Right? So Pam, with a mate, rented this catering trailer, and I thought to myself, God, at last, we're going to get some money. We're going to be rich, you know, as you do. Anyway, she worked all week from 6 o'clock in the morning, probably till 6 o'clock at night by the time you finished cleaning the van. I remember she made £7.50 all week.
Yeah.
You know, and she didn't give in. She didn't give in because that catering trailer, a year down the line, not that one because we had a brand new one, was making about £1,500 to £2,000. So it was a bit of a lot of money. So that was the start of... And she ran that basically for 18 years and I carried on painting.
Didn't you run a pub together as well?
Oh God, yeah. they were brilliant. Crap. That was Pam's idea and Ariela. It was like they got together, them two. Ariela was going out with a guy from the Crown Inn, who basically was a pub manager, and they had a bright idea that alien... This guy was going to run a pub. So they went looking at a franchise and I went with them just to check it all out. And it was just a rip-off. And Pam come with us. And before I knew what was happening, Connor, they kind of like decided that them two was going to run a pub, Ailey and Pam. Pam was going to say, and I'm thinking, all right, are we moving into a pub? Yeah. Like, you know. So basically that's how it happened. So I kind of like stopped my business. I had a partner at the time. They carried on running the painting with me intending to go back. Pam and Haley, we bought this pub in Adlington, which it opened from nothing, absolutely no customer. And it was a real gold mine. And it was like New Year's Eve every night. So it wasn't long. I'd never painted again after that for a long time. But that was like, it wasn't really a family thing. It was like, I don't think me and Pam sat down for ill together for, 3.5 years?
Yeah.
From that, we bought another pub. That was a real booze pub, that.
Mm.
So then we bought another pub up the road because that was so successful, but it was the breweries. And we was only, you know, we was working at a brewery. Yeah, don't get me wrong, we made a good lot of money on that. But then we went into the Spinner's House, which is more of an eating house. Well, they just didn't eat in Adlington. They just drunk. So that was losing £12,000 a year when we got it. And we did turn it round a bit to making nearly £12,000, but it weren't enough. And it was a lot more cosy life than running the Clayton Arms, which was a 1980 booze pub. But kind of like decided to move on. We owned that pub. We sold that pub. Then after that, I don't think Pam actually, I think the pub cleaned us out mentally because you meet that many idiots and she'd had enough from that
time. Did you feel like you were a team because you were like working together and in a relationship together and, you know, it must have been quite intense at times?
Yeah, we felt like loads of times like you do. Do you know what I mean? It's like, I remember once on bank holiday when, I mean, it was May, so it would be the August bank holiday. We weren't too busy because it was only just been opened. And I went playing golf with my mates on bank holiday. Well, I've never seen anything like it when I come home. It was absolutely chocker, this pub. There were glasses everywhere. Ireli and Pam, they were at the end of the tether. And I'd just been playing golf, so you can imagine. It was like World War III. It was like, you never do that again, you never do. Yeah, we had a lot of, like, ups and downs. And but no, we kind of like, you know, we were kind of like respected with the customers. And we made a vow that you get a lot of landlords and a lot of landladies messing about with customers, God knows what. We never did anything like that. We knew. When we first opened the Clayton Arms, we were sat in an empty pub and we both said to each other, what the hell have we done? And I just said to Pam, Luke, we've signed up for 4 years. Just pretend you're in prison for 4 years. Let's just get through it. And we did. And we made a good fist of it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then we got out of it. And Pam didn't work again after that.
Why do you think your relationship was so strong then? Because it must have been really, really tested. And like how did you, you know, keep an even keel the whole time?
I don't know really. I think we just kind of like, we did like each other for a kickoff. I think that helps, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, we did like each other. We did, you know, we obviously being married for 40 years, you go through a lot of ups and downs. But I think that's the great thing about marriage, isn't it? Because if you're not married, you just go your separate ways. And believe me, there were plenty of times, early doors and all that, where I'm thinking, what the hell am I doing?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? But you stick with it, you get through it. We was pretty good together.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know, we was pretty good. We enjoyed each other's company. So Pam was quite...
Yeah,
she was good company.
And when was Pam diagnosed with cancer?
Right, here we go. This is the right. Okay, right. Pam, right. My mum. You remember my mum, don't you? Yeah, Nanny Banny. Yeah, Nanny Banny got pancreatic cancer. She come living with us, and when she was in hospital, she was called coming out of hospital and living with us. But the day she was supposed to be doing it, she couldn't. Well, she could, but Pam had, she found that she had cancer in her bladder. This was the very first. And Pam went in, and you know what, Connor? I was never worried about that. I was never worried about that because that's contained. It was like they took the tumour out, and then it was like, at the very, very worst resort, did they take the bladder out and everything, but it never got to that. And they just, like, every year that if it a little bit come back, they scrape it off and it was called spotting and they just move on. I were never bothered about that. But the first time, a very quick story, my mum died. I don't believe in God or anything, but it makes you wonder this, I'm telling you now. My mum died on the 22nd of September, 2012. And the first year she passed away, my mum, I was at 7:15 actually. I remember it so vividly. I walked down to the bottom of the garden on my own. That there was a couple in the house with Pam and the Sandra, the Ariel and all that. And I just walked. And out the sky, I know you'll laugh at this, you, but a feather from the sky. I know you're laughing there. And it actually, I put my hand out and it landed on my hand at 7:15. Right, that's fair enough. That's that. The year after, me and Pam's in Cyprus. We have a place in Cyprus. And my mum would never go to Cyprus. And I remember remarking me. It was the same day, 22nd September. And 7:15 is coming up. And I said to Pam, you know what, love? We'll not get a sign this year. I said, because she'd never come to Cyprus. She won't come out to Kendall Street. So she won't go to Cyprus. She says, we'll not get any sign this year. And there again, I walked over at 7:15 to the other side of the swimming pool. And Pam said, she's not coming over, but guess what? I've got a lump in my breast. I said, you what? She said, I've just felt it now.
Really?
And I thought, I couldn't believe it. It was bang on, same time. But guess what? I thought it was some kind of sign saying, oh, well, you're going to be okay and all that. So we're quite... But underneath, I had a niggly feeling. And, anyway, we was there another 2 weeks. As soon as we got back, she went, she got it diagnosed, and basically, yeah, it was cancer. And I knew it was different. I just knew. I just knew that my life was going to change. I really did, Connor. I knew that things were now serious and things were different. So,
did you, as a couple, take, you know, that news on board, and what did you do then afterwards?
It's quite devastated, actually. I mean, well, first of all, you kind of think that you're going to beat it, don't you? You know, you're always going to, you always think you're going to be the one. And I was worried more than Pam. Pam was like, oh, we'll just get on with it, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then it turned out to be a grade three and a half or something like that. I can't remember. Not grade four, but not, you know, it was quite severe. And it was like, she had like the lumpectomy and everything. She was quite confident, but I was never confident. But like, we went through the old like, it's probably about 10 months. I remember Pam going in for the very first time. When you don't know what chemo is, and in them days, it's only about 5-6 years ago, Wigan Hospital was like, it was like Victorian. And we walked into this place. Oh, it was cold. It was horrible. And I can remember she sat down and she was terrified because she didn't know. You've heard this word chemo. You don't actually know what it is. You know, you think, oh, I'm having chemo. What is it? Well, actually, it's not as bad as what the picture is painted. But Pam was terrified. And she had nice hair, Pam, and she wanted to protect it. Why the hell? I don't know. But she had what was known as a cold cap. Have you heard of them, a cold cap? Well, it was the worst thing she ever could have done because she didn't, you know, and she was getting all upset and crying. And I said, God's sake, Pam. Just doesn't matter, love. If you know where, it doesn't matter. So she went through the first session of chemo with the cold cap. And when I got home, I said, come on, love, we don't need that. We don't want that. So after that, she lost all of her. And we went through the full 12 months of her having the treatment. And we're so unlucky because on the last treatment, believe me, again, it was the last treatment. We're in the reception room and there was no sign or nothing of cancer on her breast or anything. We're in the reception room and she had like a little pea lump on her neck. And that was checked out and that was like secondary cancer. And that then was, we knew then that we were in trouble. She lived another 2 years after that. I mean, how did I feel about it? I think that was your original question. I was frightened. We went into this room with this oncologist. And just how they tell you, you'll never be cured again. It'll never go away. You'll always have. It was so brutally honest and so. And I went out to that room, me. And I thought, you know what? I'll be lucky to get it on. You know, she got dropped dead in the street outside. I was like heartbroken. I thought, you know, I'm going to lose her here in the next 24 hours. That's the way it was put over to me. But it wasn't, because you still got a lot of fight in you. And that was the start of like all the trials at Christie's and all it was kind of one trial, the Symphon trial, it was called. And I remember, we bought a caravan in Garstang and we're in the caravan and it was about June and a tumour had gone down by about 60%. And England were playing and we were saying England football and we're watching that and we're texting LA and, you know, we were happy. We're thinking we're going to beat it. You never beat it. And by Christmas, that particular trial, by Christmas, it was holding its own, but the actual treatment was making her go blind.
Really?
So she had to come off. Now, Colette, there was only Pam, Colette, and two others who we don't know on this trial in England. And Colette was, this is our friend, Colette was on the trial with her, and she was in a worse state than what Pam was. And I saw Colette last week. We all went out with Colette last week for a drink with Linda, and basically, she's fine. Her tumours have like shrunk away. It's just the luck of the draw. So brilliant. That's good news, isn't it? So it worked. I don't think she's ever going to be 100% clear, but it just shows you. Yeah.
And so, how did you initially feel when she passed away?
Oh, well, there's a build up to that, really. Pam decided when we realised that. I mean, I looked after Pam. I mean, she had cancer for 3 years. We tried to keep it away from Haley and the kids and everything. Not the cancer, but the bad bits. We tried to like carry on. But near the end, Connor, it gets impossible. You can't. I mean, I was like, I was washing her. I was this. I was that. And it was getting really, really difficult. And it was becoming. And she wanted to die at home because she's seen that many. I suppose quite happy with that, you know. But I thought I'll carry on. And then one particular night. Well, we had a good conversation actually.
Yeah.
You know, a really good conversation. And she'd accepted she was going to die. This was about 3 weeks before she did. And so she said, Carl, I've got something. I need to speak to you. She was upstairs. She had a bell. I used to bloody hate that bell. You know, like if she wanted a cup of tea or she'd fallen into bed, she'd ring a bloody bell. I used to think, oh, Christ, what's this now? She'd go running upstairs. And anyway, she wanted this conversation. And she said, I know I'm going to go, Carl. I know, you know, it hurts me. It hurts me, actually, to think about this now. And she told me exactly what she wanted for a funeral. She didn't want a funeral. She wanted a direct funeral, which means her body goes and she gets cremated. We get her ashes back and then we have a stone for her that we can, I know she's not in that stone, but it's somewhere for the kids to go. And, you know what I mean? So she said that to me. She said, I want you to meet somebody else, Carl. She said, but she said, don't take the piss and do it next week after her. And don't with a tie bride, whatever you do. She's with the rules. So that was that. That was how Pam was. So I said, yeah, okay. But then there was one night, right, I tried my best to manage her, but I couldn't. And then one night, she couldn't make it, so I had to wash her. And it took me, believe me, the shower room was, 5 seconds away. That's all it is. It took me an hour and a half to take her, shower her. She couldn't breathe, but I thought, I can't, I need help. And that was the first time that I ever got help. I went to, where are they? Hang on. I can't think of the name. Anyway, all the resources was put in for us, all the district nurses and everything. They kind of took over, which they were absolutely brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. And Pam was at home. And then, you know what? The last week of Pam's life, it was kind of like a... It weren't sad as such. It sounds stupid, that. Well, if you can imagine, now we're Phil stayed. We're in the bedroom, Haley, myself, and Philip, and Pam can hardly, she's like semi-conscious and all that. And it kicked off anyway with our Phil. I mean, he's an idiot anyway, our Phil, but he's like Basil Falter. Anyway, we had, if you remember, it was like the Beast from the East Week. Do you remember that, all that? So it was, and we had workmen outside in the street and it were noisy. I said, Phil, just close them curtains. Let's have a bit of privacy. You know what I mean? Please. So he got up, started pulling them, and he pulled all bloody curtains down everywhere. Well, me and IRL is like bloody laughing our head off because it's just typical of our Phil, this. He's like, he's so clumsy. So he's there trapped. We don't. He could tell I was annoyed and he's like rushing about it. So that was like the start of the week. But what, in a way, What a quite a, you know, we really gelled, the three of us, that week, because we were there for a full week. But one bad, dying's not easy, Connor. Dying's not like the movies, lad. Like movies, you know, there was like, and I've had it out with a district nurse and everything since. What they do, they put like a driver in your arm, which helps ease the pain. But by about Wednesday, you phone these two numbers up. And then when they're in pain, the district nurse comes out and gives them an extra shot, which they're on morphine 24/7, but somebody comes out and gives them an extra shot. That's the process of kind of like passing away, what they do. Well, this particular Wednesday, Pam's like in a real bad way. And 2.5 hours we were phoning. Nobody was coming. It was horrendous. Well, we just didn't know what to do. Nobody come. And anyway, we found out afterwards. You think you're kind of phoning somewhere like an ambulance station or something. But what you're actually doing, you're phoning a district nurse who's actually treating somebody and organising other district nurses while she's treating. It's scandalous. I mean, and when she come to, when eventually this district nurse come to my house, her phone was ringing all the time and she was just clicking it off. She went, so that's what she was doing to me. I don't blame the district nurse. I don't blame, it's the system, it's complete wrong. I was actually working, yesterday I was working at a district nurse's house and I explained this to her because she, that's the job. And she said, Carl, I am sick and tired of people telling me this and I can't get nowhere with it. They're not even listening to you. It's not, I would never ever, if somebody said to me, where do you want to die? I would say, not at home. Going to hospice, going out. My mum went in a hospital. I didn't even know she was in pain. I never saw it because they control it, they monitor it. Anyway, that was that. Pam passed away on the Friday. You know what? I actually missed that too. She was like, I was that tired. I'd spent probably 3 weeks without any proper sleep or anything. And I went toilet, I come back, Phil's in bed next to her. And I said to Phil, just give me 10 minutes, mate. I said, I just need to sleep. I went downstairs and 10 minutes later, he called me and said, she's gone. And I missed her. After all that time being with her, I missed her. But how did I feel? I felt absolutely elated. I felt like I'd won the lottery. Honestly, that would sound stupid. She was out of the misery.
That's so surprising.
When you actually get to that, it sounds stupid to you, that problem.
It's not what you'd naturally think.
Like, just for like a full day, it was like, oh, God. And then you go up, you have a look at her, and it's not Pam. You look at her and think, that's not you, love. That's not you. I opened the window to let her spirit out. That's what I was told. So I did. Wherever she's gone, she's gone. You know what I mean? So, yeah.
How did you cope afterwards then?
I did a cope. Not very good. All my mates disappeared. To be honest, they disappeared 2.5 years ago. Nobody wants to be talking to cancer with anybody who's ill. Our mates become the doctors and the nurses. How did I cope? I suppose I was drinking a lot. I think I was lonely, very, very lonely. I spent a lot of time on my own in a room. I was only hurting our Hayley. We was going for walks, me and Hayley. We were talking about it and we were upsetting each other. A girl from my past who used to go out with my friend, she phoned me out of nowhere. Her name's Lynn. She was brilliant for me. She helped me. Her husband had just died, and we were good for each other. We spent a lot of time talking. She helped me a great deal. I think I started to change very, very slowly when I met your dad in Manchester. Yeah. You know what your dad's like. You know what I mean? We had a good night together. We had a few drinks. And he says to me, he says, look at your dress. He says, you're like an old man. This is your dad's telling me. You know what your dad dresses? He's like 18, your dad. Uh-huh. He's telling me, saying, smarten yourself up, Carl. You know, you've got a life to live. And I thought, bloody hell, who do you think you are? But it kind of sunk in a little bit. And I told you what he said. I got a text when I left him. I got a text. I was meeting, actually, Colette, right? That's the girl I was telling you about who had cancer with Pam. So I arranged to meet Colette the week after. So I got this text from your dad. He says, for God's sake, when you go meeting Colette, make sure you shave your eyebrows. You look like an old man. Anyway, you know. So I started slowly changing and I met you, didn't I? We went down Bristol. So I started slowly, and then I'm still lonely at this stage, not going anywhere, doing a lot.
Do people treat you differently, do you think?
Oh, yeah, people kind of like cross the road because they don't know what to say. Yeah, I have a cousin who I know very, very well, who lives 200 yards away. He'd go in a different direction. Right. Rather than speak. I've not spoken to him to this day about it. Because I never see him because he runs away.
Yeah. Did you struggle accepting it?
No. Because I'd had 3 years. I was ready for it. I prepared myself to say. No. Because my funeral was probably the last 6 months. Yeah. The best part of my married life, actually, was the last 3 years. It sounds stupid, but we were so close, you know, and it taught me a lot. It told me not to be selfish, although I don't suppose Linda would agree with that one, but yeah, you know what I mean? It taught, I'm a different person. I am completely different than what I was. Who is Carl Bannister? Is it Carl Bannister from 18? Is it Carl Bannister who was married? Or is it Carl Bannister now? I don't even know where I am half the time. All I know is, has it changed me? It bloody has changed me, yeah. Because I don't care. I do not care if somebody don't like me, if somebody don't upset, I don't care. I just do. Yeah, I am selfish because I just do what I want. Not selfish, but it's taught me that I've lost anyway in life. So I basically can't lose again. So I enjoy life. It's called being free. I'm actually free now. Nobody owns me. My work don't own me anymore. I just do what I want. So, well, can you come tomorrow? I can't come. You what? No. I'm playing golf. I just do what I want. Yeah. How good's that? And that's where I'm up to with my life at the moment. Anyway, yeah.
Do you believe in life after death? Because you've mentioned, you know, sort of opening the curtains to let Pam's spirit out and things. What are your sort of thoughts on that?
Life after death. This podcast is not wondering for that, lad. Life after death. Well, let's put it this way. That guy with beard up there, he don't exist. Not in the way that the Bible tells you. Isn't it? Eh? And all his disciples, Matthew, Luke, John, and they're all English, aren't they? Why are they called Muhammad or something like that? It's a load of trollop, isn't it? Yeah, so no, I don't. But because of Linda, I have now, I do believe that Pam is somewhere else. I think Linda's belief is basically that. I think we talked about this before, where we're kind of like, we're in a soul group. So like, I believe I've probably met Linda before, somewhere in the past. I believe Pam's spirit's somewhere, and I will meet her again, but I don't think it'll look like Pam. I think it'll be just this lady, and we'll have a connection. She won't be called Pam. She won't be I don't think you stop. I think if you've got a spirit or something, I think it continues to live, but not probably in the same form. Whether I meet her again, I don't know. I don't know. But I don't believe that, you know what I mean? I don't believe in him who says, you don't believe in me. You don't believe in me. Well, I'll tell you, you'll go to hell and burn for the rest of your life because I love you. I don't think so, do you? Anyway, but that's where I feel about it. You can cut all that out. It'll not offend half the world.
So you've mentioned Linda now. And so Linda is your new partner and you're going to get married in January. So that's obviously the first question everyone, you know, would ask is that's a quick turnaround. What sort of...
it's like we're losing 1-0 at half time and then we put the subs on and then second half is a quick turnaround. And yeah, I know what you mean, yeah. Quick turnaround. Well, that's one way of putting it. Let me just tell you this, right? This is before me and you fell out, Connor. But you do get people. I mean, your question to me, a quick turnaround, I'm thinking. Some people have a quick turnaround a month later. Some take 10 years. There is no grief. There's no time limit. There's no time limit on nothing, as I've learned. Right. So basically, when did I meet Linda?
Yeah,
is that what you want to know? What's all that about?
Yeah.
I had joined what's known as a widow's support group on Facebook. Mm-hmm. Right. So, you know, I never post on Facebook and stuff like that. But this is like, there's a lot of people at different stages of, and when you first join this group, they're all feeling like you. You think they're all feeling like you feel. And it's quite a good group, actually. And I never ever post. Anyway, this particular time I posted like, well, I'm going to Marbella soon playing golf with Ada and three lads. I don't even know them, but I'm going. I'm just going to go. And I'm a bit nervous and I'm a bit this and a bit that. And that's what I put on this widow's site. And I got a load of replies back. And one of them was like, I put like, I don't know what Pam would think about this as we didn't do like days away. And Linda, I didn't know Linda at this stage. She just put, well, Pam would say, don't drink too much. And I thought, you know what? She bloody would too. So I just wrote back to Linda, who I didn't know at this stage. I just said, did you know what? So that kind of put a seed into her head. And I looked at this little picture and I thought, you know what? It's quite... And I kept an eye on Linda after that. I kept an eye on what she was, her posts and this and the other. And I thought to myself, I've never done it, but I'm going to ask her to be a friend on Facebook. And let's see. Because I'm now getting to the stage where I want to progress in life. I don't want to be sad all my life. So I did. I asked her to be a friend. Do you want to know what happened next?
Go on.
Anyway, it took nearly 24 hours. Obviously, she was checking my profile, mate. I'd not been in prison, and you know what I mean? All stuff like that.
Yeah, dodgy car banister.
Probably checking my bank account, and God knows. You know what I mean? So she actually messaged me back. And then I'll have to roll my hands up now. It was my mistake. But you know what I'm like on Facebook and even trying to contact you today, I'm bloody hopeless, you know, and stuff like that. So anyway, I'm now at home. She's messaged me back. And we've sent a few texts between us, jokey texts and this and the other. And, you know, and next minute, she's on there speaking to me. And I'm saying, oh, you phoned me. She says, no, you phoned me. I said, no. You phoned me. Well, the evidence is there, isn't it? I actually phoned her by mistake. But we spent an hour speaking, right? So that's then we arranged to meet up in Manchester. So just imagine this now. This is gonna make you feel physically sick. Two old people, you're saying like, well, what do you do? Do you like, do we all dance or do we? What do you actually do? I mean, because, like, it's 40 years. I've been with the same woman for 40 years. You are, you meet her in some way, and you don't even know. And what do you do? And anyway, we agreed that we'd all dance. You know, we agreed. So we all danced. And we went off and we had a good... I thought, anyway, we had a really, really good afternoon, you know. And then I got home and then she sent me a message. I can't see you again. She dumped me. She dumped me. I couldn't believe it. Connor, I couldn't believe it. I thought, cheeky. I thought, what have I done wrong? I couldn't believe it. So I asked her, why? She gave me a lot of crap, really. You know, about like, I wanted treating better than that, going to Wetherspoons, YouTube. Mate, took it Wetherspoons at middle afternoon. Where am I supposed to take it, Ritz? Do you know what I mean? It's just like a, I don't even know. Where would you take it? Where would you go? Wetherspoons, nothing. I know it's not, you know, but what would you say if she was like really bad? And you took it, Ritz, you'd have wasted your money, wouldn't you? So, well, that was an excuse from Linda. I don't know. I think she just got frightened or whatever because of a bit over the top and all that. Mm. And she'd been married for 40 years to Paul. Paul had died in a suddenly having an operation. Okay. So she'd been on her own for like 3 years. So I was probably a bit, you know, she's probably thinking, well, he's only been on his own like 9 months. And I think she just got frightened. And anyway, I pestered her. I kept pestering her. And eventually she wilted and she had another date with me. And we get on, you know. So that's how that one went, you know. So.
Yeah. And how do you, now that you know, you're going to get married in January, what do other people think of you getting married? Do you get judgment?
We get judged.
Them?
We get judged a lot. We're getting judged from the family. We're getting judged from. I first told our Hayley. I thought she was okay with it at first, and then Eddie then told me afterwards that she was a bit upset about it and all this and that. So I was a bit like dropped on with that. And then Nicoma, she was really against me getting married again. I couldn't, it was upsetting actually. And kind of like, when I spoke to her about it, she says, well, you only get married to have kids. Why are you bothering? You know? And I said, right. I said, okay. I said, both to Hayley and to Nicoma. I said, let's turn it on the other foot. Why have you got married, Hayley? Why have you got married? You know, and I'll ask you the same question, Nicoma. Why, when you eventually get married, I'll ask you that question and think back to what you've asked me. Why am I getting married? Because, you know what, you know, earlier in our conversation, what we was having, when we was on about Pam, and we said, yeah, we used to fall out a lot, me and Pam, but because we were married, we stuck it out, and it's worth it.
Yeah.
I don't know where it is. But marriage is about belonging to each other. This is what I believe. And you stick it out. You stick it. I think Linda's having more problems than what I am with some of her family about. They'll all get used to it in time because I ain't going away and Linda's not going away. And once we're married, that's it. We'll have to accept the situation. There's been quite a lot of people who's been really accepted of it. They're really pleased for us. So a bit of a mixed response, to be honest. As most of the people on that widow's side, if you listen to a lot of their remarks, their children are really against like the second chapter of their life. Do you know what I mean? So it's it's Connor, you'll cut this out. I remember what you were like when your dad married Laura. I looked after you.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah, you don't want to know that, do you? I don't know. You'll cut that out. But anyway, you've got over it. So you just,
yeah,
you
true.
Know. How does it feel like of it on the other foot, lad? Well, next question.
So how does it make you feel about getting married again?
I'm so looking forward to it. I really, because I think that's actually what I want. It's what I want a life where I share. I do. I want to. At the moment, me and Linda, we're kind of like, she's half at time in Didsbury. I'm not seeing her now for about a week because of different things. I don't want that. That proves difficult. You know, like when you're just on Messenger. And I think that's, to be honest, that's where your dad is, with his job taking him all over the world. You can't get a stable relationship, proper, you know. And I think that I need that, something to live with, to share with, to do stuff with, you know. But that's the kind of person I am. I don't want to be Jack the Lad. I don't want to be, have a few mates who were like, you know, they're out drinking, they're this, they're that, playing golf, going on days away with lads. It's not me. I'm not like that.
No, I'm exactly the same. I sort of just, I don't know. Feels like you want to be in a relationship with your best mate, and I think as a result you enjoy life so much more because you're, as you said, sharing experiences together. And
you are, aren't you? But the thing is now, I know that because I don't care anymore. Yeah. I do what I have to do. That's why I know it. You know what I mean? And that's what I want, and I'm not bothered about anybody else. So it don't bother me. If somebody says to me, I mean, they have to. They give up on me now. It was like, oh, do you want to go back to London for the watch the tennis again this November? I said, no, I've done that. Do you want to come like to Europe, biking over Europe? Like, no, it's not. I don't want. So if I don't want, I don't do it. What's that? I can just do that. Yeah.
So what have you learned in the last year?
The last year, I've learned I'm a lot stronger than what I thought I would be. I've learned I'm a lot. Am I happy? I don't know if I'm. You know, when you're 18, 19, and you used to walk along the street and then you get a burst of happiness, you do a little skip. I don't get that.
Yeah.
But I'm content. I know where I am.
Yeah.
Like you say, as long as Linda's with me, I'm settled. Yeah.
Well, thanks, Carl. I think we've learned a lot.
Your mates will have.
Yeah. All right. Cheers, Carl.
Hello.
So that does it for this episode. I hope you enjoyed. I hope you can take something away and something we can definitely gain from Carl's perspective and his life situation. Thanks for tuning in once again. I really, really appreciate it. If you want to support the show, please share the episode or share your favourite episode. Links can be found on Spotify, iTunes, Mixcloud, which I'm going to start promoting a bit more, and Podbean. And even YouTube. So thank you. And if you have any interesting topics you'd like to discuss, feel free to get in contact, and hopefully we can find some way of making that happen. All right. Thank you. Bye.